This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is Kerry Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
Good day, Stephen.
Hey, Kerry, how are you?
I'm all right. Ready to talk about our furry friends.
All right, we're going to talk about animals. First question, Kerry, are you a pet owner? Are there pets in your family?
No, my grandparents on my father's side have a dog, but they're in Mississippi, mm-hmm. So I don't see that pet often.
You don't see that pet much, right?
And my grandmother used to have a cat some years ago, but I think she ran away. So I wouldn't say I'm someone who's terribly experienced in having, owning, and taking care of a pet myself.
Okay.
I was also young, so I didn't have to get the food. I didn't have to deal with all the expenses.
Was not responsible. Yeah. So, I was thinking about this the other day. There are only 4 years in my adult life that I have not been a pet owner. So, I'm kind of the flip side of that coin to you.
A PhD in pet ownership,
right?
I should say.
I've had many, many, many dogs. That's been my preference most of the time. Mm-hmm. And more recently, I also welcomed a cat into the household. But I currently have two dogs, an Aussie Doodle, who is 11 months old and quite a handful. And a French bulldog who is going to be 6 in just a little bit. So, it's a huge part of my life, and it's a huge part of my household. It's a huge part of my family. The things that you end up doing, the things that mm-hmm. you find yourself concerned with, the things that you find yourself kind of focused on when mm-hmm. you have a pet in your family, I think would surprise some people who don't have pets, how much it takes, how much attention, and of course, how many resources you end up dedicating to these lovable members of your family.
I am pretty adamant about taking my time on when that time comes for when I decide to get a pet. I mean, I like cats more so, but I've been leaning towards dogs as well. But the most important thing is, do I have the time mm-hmm. and will I want to be able to, or can I invest the amount of money that it would take to be able to get them, make sure they have good health care and make sure they have all the food that they need. All of that constant attention you're talking about is stuff I want to make sure I'm being very intentional about. And what we're going to talk about today is about folks who sometimes, you know, you're caught in a bind and you're dealing with the challenges of your financial challenges. And so that puts a strain on their ability to do all those things.
Yeah. I mean, we know about the community that we live in, especially here in Detroit, but of course, in many places in Southeast Michigan, and the economic distress that is just everywhere right now, and the number of people who struggle to keep shelter and food and safety within their grasp. And we don't always think about the fact that that also affects pets. If you have pets in your family, those stresses about shelter or food or safety get passed on a lot of the time to those mm-hmm. animals. And so we've got the CEO of Michigan Humane here, Matt Pepper, with us to talk about the ways in which that organization has had to kind of evolve its work to meet more of those needs, to try to figure out not just how to keep pets safe, but how to keep families in a position where they can keep their pets safe. Really interesting, different way to think about equality here in Southeast Michigan. Matt Pepper, it's great to have you here with us in the studio. Welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. Good to see you.
Yeah. So let's start with just a thumbnail of Michigan Humane. I think everyone has heard of the Humane Society, which mm-hmm. is what it was called for years and years and years. But I'm not sure everyone quite understands what the mission and role of that organization is now, especially now that it's called Michigan Humane. That's a little bit different. I know the work is evolving, but give us a sense of the purview, I guess, the scope of work and activity that goes on at Michigan Humane.
Yeah, well, first of all, when Kerry's ready, I know a guy who can help him. We're ready to take this issue up.
There are plenty to be had.
He's asking all the right questions. So Michigan Humane is the oldest and largest animal welfare organization in Michigan. And we pride ourselves on focusing on sort of both ends of the leash. And while the name change is a nuance, it's an important part of the journey. So in 1877, we were just the Humane Society because we were the only one. 1924, we became the Michigan Humane Society. And in 2019, we became just Michigan Humane. But in order to talk about where we are now, it's kind of important to go back 147 years and talk about who we were. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think of Michigan Humane and Michigan Humane Society as an organization where it's a great place to adopt a dog. And we are. We have lots of animals, great animals, great cats up for adoption. If you're looking for one, we're ready to help you. But that's not how we started. We started helping horses, which at that time in Detroit were everything from transportation to carriage, much more urban animals. And we also were helping women and children, the subject of domestic violence, the human element of our work. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, just a quick connection between the human condition and pets. The first ever case of child abuse in New York City, Mary Ellen Todd was her name. She was 11-year-old. Was the man who led that charge was Henry Berg. And if you don't know who Henry Berg is, he's the man who started the ASPCA. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they've always been strongly connected, the human condition and pets, and recognizing that suffering is equivalent in both pets and people. Now what we pride ourselves on being a human-centered animal welfare organization, so the name change is kind of important. Even though it is just a word, we dropped it for a couple reasons. Number one, the easy one is brand confusion. The word Humane Society is a generic term. So people think I'm going to donate to the Humane Society of the United States and it'll trickle down to you, or Huron Valley must be a part of Michigan Humane Society. And it's just not true. We're all separate organizations. It's a generic term. The other ones were a little bit more philosophical. It was the word, as we talk about the world we live in right now, and really a lot of the topics you talk about here, we talk about our services trying to be equitable, that everyone in this community can access our services and be a part of them. And the word society inherently is an exclusive term. So we dumped it for that reason. And the other reason is the word humane and humanity isn't limited to pets. It touches the lives of people. And if you can learn how to be compassionate and show humanity to a pet, you can learn how to show it to your neighbor.
And so, in addition to being the place that, you know, if you have an excited child who's decided that they want a pet and you're going to indulge that, you go down and you can get one. Talk about some of the other things that you find yourself doing.
Yeah. So adoption is a big part of our job. But as I always tell people, you know, behind closed doors, it's not what we were started for. We were started to protect pets and protect people and keep families together. A lot of what we do is things that you may not think of doing. So we work with domestic violence shelters on making sure that pets have a place to go. So a battered woman in a domestic violence situation will stay in that situation 2 years longer if she has a pet. Hmm. More than 40% of women won't leave a situation unless they can take their pet with them. So working on foster homes that can take pets so people can get out of dangerous situations. Major medical treatment. There's a study by University of Michigan that shows that a third of people delayed major medical treatment because they didn't know what to do with their dog or who's going to watch their cat. 19% of those people left directly against the doctor's orders because they had to get back to their pet. So finding places that can help support the pet so people can get the health that they need. But a lot of it is sort of asking that second question. It is providing adoptions, but it's also providing veterinary care. Detroit is the very definition of a veterinary desert. I mean, there are maybe 12 clinics in the entire city of 630,000 people, no emergency room care, and we constitute the largest. And so people often talk about, why didn't someone get their animal veterinary care? Well, even if they could afford it, where would they go?
Where would you go?
So our job is about bringing, we find ourselves in meeting people where they are and bringing veterinary care into the community so that people can at least have access to it, understand what it means. Because you made a point in the beginning about, you know, that pets often suffer because of the human issues around poverty and around financial resources. The reality is it's not usually the pets that suffers. People often will sacrifice their own health and safety
in favor
for that of their pets. I can give you, can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, sure.
So how this vision started for Michigan Humane and being a human-centered organization was, I was in law enforcement and I was in Tylertown, Mississippi, responding to Hurricane Katrina. And I was the one that was on the boats looking for people who had left their pets behind. And as I was in Tylertown, I was working security there. There was a man, I mean, torn up, muddy, ripped jean shorts, shirt that had just everything, mud all over it. And he's holding this little white dog and there's no shoes on. He's walking towards us. And every step he takes, there's a bloody footprint. And he comes to us and he tells us his story that he was there. National Guard knocked on his door. Hey, water's coming. You got to get out of here. And he goes, okay, let me go get my dog. And at that time, dogs were not considered parts of emergency plans. They were not, your dog was not going with you. And there are countless people who died during Hurricane Katrina because they would not leave their pet behind.
They would not leave their pets, yeah.
Yep. So this man, he said he went, okay, well, I'll be right back. And he went and grabbed his dog and hid in the attic from the National Guard.
Wow.
They finally said, okay, he's not coming. I'm out of here. We got to go. Water's coming now. So they left. Water kept rising. And forced him up onto a hot tin roof in New Orleans summer, waiting for help. So he stood there holding his dog with bare feet on a hot tin roof in New Orleans for 3 days until someone rescued him. And when he came to us, all he wanted was food and water for his dog. He wouldn't take any money, wouldn't take any help from us. And if you think about that, that is a man who said, I would rather die than leave this dog behind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now extrapolate that to all of the little decisions we have to make every day. Do I eat or does the dog eat? The dog needs medication, but I do too. Okay, let's get the dog's medication. So your story about only having 4 adult years without a pet mm-hmm. is equivalent to about 70% of Americans.
Right.
That's the majority of people's experiences.
Yeah.
And so I believe that we don't see animal issues manifesting themselves in the animal. We see it in people.
Yeah.
And people deserve to have a pet because our lives are better. And we exist to make sure they don't have to surrender them.
Yeah. You know, it's such a hidden issue, though, this idea of not just what it takes to have a pet and take care of it, but the stresses that enter into that equation and how they look different in a city like Detroit than they would in other places.
Yeah, you're correct. So again, I'm thinking about what Carrie said about, do I have enough money, the resources? That's the primary driver in people's concerns about pet acquisition right now. And there was a study that shows that particularly people who struggle with resources, that if you have a pet and you can provide for your pet, your life is, you're more emotionally stable, you're more physically active, you're more connected to your neighbors. However, if you have a pet and can't afford to care for your pet, it is worse than not having a pet at all because your worries and your fears and your stress are amplified because you're worried about something else.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Matt Pepper, the CEO of Michigan Humane, about how we care for pets here in Detroit and Wayne County. We're also going to get going with you, the listeners on the phones. What a fun subject. Call and let us know about your relationship with the four-legged or maybe two-legged pets that you have in your family. How much do they mean to you? Talk about the levels of responsibility and commitment that it takes to make sure that your pets are cared for. How much are they a part of your family? Call and tell us the stories about how much of a role they play in the family life in your household. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and today we're talking about the pets that are part of our families. We've got Matt Pepper. He is the CEO of Michigan Humane, someone who has more than 20 years of experience in animal welfare. We're talking about what it takes to care for our pets and the stresses that get put on that care by the economic conditions that so many people in our region face. We also would love to hear from you, the listeners, during this conversation. I have pets. I know most people that I know have pets, and I know a lot of the listeners here have pets. Call and tell us about those relationships, the pets that you have, how important they are to your family, and what it takes, the commitment, the resources to make sure that those pets are well cared for. Talk about how that gets integrated into the way you think about care for the human members of your family, how much our pets become literal members of our families. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either hashtag created equal, or you can at WDET. Matt, before we get to listeners, I want to talk a little about the intervention that you guys are called on to make in cities like Detroit. Sometimes that's about an individual dog or cat that might be stuck somewhere or trapped or seem neglected. But there's also, a broader community intervention that you're called on to make, and that's to make sure that, you know, on the whole, the cat population, the dog population are not being mistreated, will have shelter, will have opportunities to join families. Give us a sense of what that looks like right now in Detroit. I was saying earlier in the show that, you know, this is a community that has an awful lot of economic distress. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. What does that look like for pets in this community?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to comment on that, there was a study from the Pew Research Center a little while ago that talked about how closely you connect to your pets. And I think conversely to what people think, I mean, they see some of the areas in Detroit and they see dog tied up out back and they wonder, oh, that family must not love that dog. That's not true. It's probably because there's very little low-income housing that allows pets in Detroit. There's not a safe space for not many people to walk their pet, be with their pet. What that study found was that the less money you made, the more likely you were to consider your pet an equal member of the family. Mm. So as a former law enforcement officer, I was a special deputy in Grand Rapids doing animal cruelty, and I still teach police officers. What I have found is that as a whole, Detroit loves its pets. Mm-hmm. And most of the things that I think a lot of people consider quote cruelty isn't cruelty. It's just a lack of resources or education. When I was in law enforcement, I had a philosophy that if you don't know, it's my job to teach you. If you don't care, there are those instances, then it's time to go to jail. Uh-huh. But if you don't know, which is an overwhelming majority of our work, let's connect you to some resources. If it's the difference between, okay, you know, your dog outside, your dog needs to eat more in the winter because they burn more calories. So let's figure out how we can get you on some food. A doghouse, it gets really cold here, but you need some straw in there. Make sure your dog's got some straw. We can help you with that. Let's help support you here. It is medical care. I mean, as we talked about earlier, even if you wanted to go, where would you go? So for us, bringing care into the community and saying, let's help you get what you need. There was a study a little while ago that was an overwhelming majority, somewhere between 70 and 80% of people that says, if you live in poverty, you may have never had an interaction with a veterinarian in your life. So for many of the communities that we're dealing with, we are their only chance to have a positive relationship with a veterinarian, and we want to make the most of it. Because when we changed our name to Michigan Humane, we also changed how we tell a story. Hmm. If you think about animal welfare, you think of Sarah McLachlan and Arms of the Angel. And a lot of the stories.
Those late night commercials.
Exactly. And it's all the suffering and it's everyone's being yeah. abused. And it's people from the suburbs come in and go, look at what I'm doing to help support these pets and taking them out of here and getting them into better situations. That's not the world we live in. The world we live in is, hey, you're struggling. Let's pull you up and let's walk together. So if you think about the Jungian archetypes, which is what we went through, you know, everyone is the hero. We don't want to be hero. Hmm. We went to the orphan or the everyman archetype, which is let's pick ourselves up. Let's do this together. And you tell your story. So it's a little bit of a difference in our pet food pantry.
Yeah.
It's not me going, I'm going to give you a 30-pound bag of food and feed your dog. It's I'm going to give you a bag of food and you can feed your dog because your dog's important to you. And that little difference in listening to the community differently, we have found that this community just needs help and loves its pets. And that if we can provide resources to keep pets in their homes and keep families together, kids are going to be happier. Families are going to be more emotionally supported. You know, when people are out walking their dogs, there's less crime because people are visible and watching. People are healthier and safer with pets. Mm-hmm. And I mean that seriously. When you want to have a conversation about creating healthier and safer communities in Detroit, you need to think about the pets. And the other side of that is we talk about attracting and retaining talent. People in their 20s right now are making life decisions based on their pets, and we need to make it easier for them to choose Detroit.
Yeah. So give me an example of how you make the support work. For instance, if you get a call that, hey, there's a dog who lives behind me and they're outside all day on a chain, and yep. I'm concerned that the dog never seems to be, you know, eating or drinking and is never in the house. How do you approach that in a way that's about supporting that family rather than saying, hey, we're going to take this dog from them?
Yeah, so there's two aspects of that conversation. And I'm going to actually start with the second one, which is a pet is only as healthy and safe as the family it lives with and the community it lives in.
Yeah.
So let's take the human element. We'll put that to the side for a minute. But the first thing is let's go ahead and figure out what's happening. So a lot of call, first of all, I would rather everyone call and have us check them out and have and miss, you know, have 1,000 ones that are fine than miss one that wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is to go out there, make a presence, let people know that there's resources out there. The first thing we do is figure out what's actually happening. So a lot of times it's it could be fencing, could be containment. All right, well, then I can see why the dog is tethered right now. Let's figure out what we can do to make this a better situation. We do not let perfect get in the way of better.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that there are constraints on people's lives and pets' lives, and let's elevate them both and make them better. So we figure out what resources do you need. Because if I go there and take that dog, what's going to happen is that family is going to go, well, fine, if that's all these people are going to do when they come to my house, then I'm not answering the door next time.
Mm.
And I'm just going to get another dog.
Right.
So we did a recent study. It was racial disparities in animal welfare through the University of Tennessee. And they talked about acquisition. And if you live in poverty, 40 to 50% of the time you get a dog because a neighbor's dog walked up on your porch or a neighbor's dog had a litter. So if I go there and take your dog, and then the next time you're just going to take when the neighbor has another dog, you're going to get another one, same problem. And you're not going to answer the door next time.
It's not going to get any better.
No. So let's create a relationship and figure out, how do we make this better? How do we help improve the situation? And from there, it's resources. We have a 26,000 square foot warehouse that we co-house with gleaners and help support our work. We have plenty of food there. A lot of it is food, housing. A lot of the issues in pets are equivalent to what the biggest struggles that people face. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be food,
basics.
Shelter, utilities. Yeah. Yeah. So how do we provide the basics and help you with your life? And then from there, real quick, it's okay. Hey, I had to feed your dog. That's okay. But are you struggling feeding yourself? So we have human social workers on staff and community advocates whose job it is to say, oh, let's see what other elements might need, because there are usually resources for other issues, and the pet is safer if the human is better off.
Yeah. Connecting people with the things that they need. I mean, it's sort of a wraparound approach. Is that new? Is that what the Humane Society has always done? I mean, that seems maybe beyond the call of the mission of your specific organization.
Yeah, I think there's some people who may think, oh, that seems like missions creep, that you're kind of connecting people to human food insecurity organizations, mm-hmm. domestic violence shelters, mm-hmm. utility support. I would challenge that. We get really unique access into people's lives through their pets. I mean, if you think about the city of Detroit, there's a lot of people that the residents have been promised over the years. And when you walk up and say, I'm here to help, the answer a lot of times is, I'm sure you are. There's been a lot of people in here to help. However, when you say, hey, let's talk about your dog, it becomes, oh, man, this is my dog. I'm going to tell you about my pet. I love my pet, everything about it. And then you realize there's a hole in the ceiling. I can help you with that. Or the power's out. A great story. One of our employees and a mutual friend of ours, Deb Scola, was walking through the North End. And we have mapped the entire North End. We've knocked on every door. We know what pets live there. We know what people live there. We know what needs they're connected to.
And this is where your shelter is now.
Mm-hmm. Right
the,
there.
The very nice new building.
Yeah, it's where I'm sure your producer is going to be coming after the show to make sure he picks
to
up
get
a
his
pet.
Dog, right?
That's right. So we were doing these door-to-door knocks, we ended up coming across the family who was clearly having a birthday party. And we knocked on the door and said hello. And first of all, the answer was, why are you here? I don't need you here. And we said, we're just here to talk about the dog. And it was two dogs came running out. Well, let's talk about the dogs. We started having conversations. And then we recognized this was during the huge storms we had about 3-4 years ago. And all the power was out in the North End. And there was a little girl inside. And she was on a feeding tube and some other issues. And she just had open heart surgery. And as we started to be there, just talking about the pet, the family, we asked them, what's going on with her? And the story comes out, she just had recent surgery, and the power's out. And frankly, we don't know if that's going to keep their equipment on. Like, we're concerned about her life. So we call our friends over at DTE. They come over, they bring a generator over. And I recognize that by asking, can I pet your pet? Can I talk to your dog? That we learned that there's a child who could potentially be in danger. Family didn't know what to do. Got them the connected resources all through the pet. And that's the access we have. And I don't look at it as mission creep. I look at it as an obligation.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned this idea about the veterinary desert that we're living in. That's not just a Detroit problem. I mean, this is a problem in many communities. What do you do about that? I mean, there are fewer people, right, who are deciding to go do that work, and there are fewer of them who are coming to cities like Detroit.
Yeah, we're doing a couple things about it. Number one is, first of all, I want to comment on that. You're absolutely correct. There right now, for every one opening in the country, there are 18 veterinarians looking for a job. There are 18 openings, I'm sorry, for every one
for
veterinarian
one,
looking
one,
for
yeah.
And there are only 31, 32 veterinary schools in the entire country. And being a veterinarian is hard. It comes with equivalent debt of medical school without the equivalent salary. The suicide rate among female veterinarians is 3 times the national average. So being a veterinarian is hard, and we are seeing people struggling to find that as a viable career pathway. Things are changing right now. We're working around the country. There's working on things like a mid-level practitioner, equivalent of a nurse practitioner, that it can help spread some of the wealth. What we are doing about it is trying to build our own homegrown talent. So what we have found in the city as we work with schools like Detroit Crystal Ray, Crockett Midtown, the DIA, we have found that there are some kids here who want to be veterinarians but don't see that as a possible future for them. So we now have internships we're working with on helping expose people to that career path. We have an apprentice program for licensed vet techs where we pay for your tuition and give you a mentor and then get you through that schooling to be a licensed vet tech. And we hope that you stay here right serving this community. The reality is, like, as in veterinary medicine, there just isn't enough opportunities here for people to see themselves in the work. So we want to make sure, I guess, let me go back to the vet tech program. We started that before as an opportunity to help try to draw Detroit talent to be a vet tech. And what we found is that the populations we were targeting couldn't use the program we had before because you had to go to school full time and you couldn't work. And people would say, that's a great program, but I have to feed myself. So I'm out. So for 3 years, we had a program that nobody could use and had to develop it into a way that we could support. You could get a job working for us. We could pay for your tuition. And then in several years, you'll be a licensed vet tech. We have 13. We also have a summer jobs program. This year, we had 100 applicants from all over the country bringing people to Detroit. We hired 15 students from 6 different universities to work for 8 to 10 weeks. We're hoping that they see this city as a great place to come work. And then we also have surgical externs that come from all over the country to see Detroit and get exposed to the city. And hopefully they, again, come and stay where we are. And the focus on that program is to build homegrown talent, but also diversify an industry that is not a diverse industry. So 2% of veterinarians are African-American and 3% of vet techs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We feel like we can change that and build some homegrown talent and keep them right here in Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take another quick break here. And when we come back, we are going to continue talking about pets and families in Detroit and Southeast Michigan. And we're going to get to the listeners on the phones and on social. Call and tell us what role the pets in your lives play in your family and in your life. Talk about the responsibility of having pets, how much that is, how you make sure that you can meet that responsibility. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phone. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, #createdequal or @WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking with Matt Pepper. He's the CEO of Michigan Humane and has over 20 years of experience in animal welfare. We're talking about how we care for the pets that are part of our families here in Detroit and Southeast Michigan, and how some of the stressors that make life difficult, the economic circumstances that so many people face, make that difficult or more difficult when you do have a pet. How do you make sure that you can care for the pet you adopt into your family? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones if you'd like to join. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag CreatedEqual or at WDET. We're going to start today with Layla out in Plymouth. Layla, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment is a little bit maybe unrelated, but we have a small horse farm in Plymouth, and we are running some young person's horsemanship clinics over the summer. And we were having, our students were like between the ages of 6 and 11, and towards the end of the week, the students, well, they'd fallen in love with the horses, and they were asking me how much I would sell them for. And I didn't clue in at first, and I'm like, you know, I would never sell our horses. And they're like, no, like if you really had to, like, how much would you sell Wish, who's a 25-year-old horse that we have? And I said, oh, I could never sell her. And they're like, well, what about Nutty? And she's 9 years old. And I said, oh, no. And they said, well, if you had to. And I said, okay, well, if I had to, I guess I would sell Nutty. And they all look so downtrodden because they all loved our older mare. And they're like, well, really, why? And the parents are standing around and they're all sort of chuckling and observing this. And I said, well, because Nutty's young and she could start again if she had to. Mm-hmm. But Wish is older and, you know, this is her home and we got to take care of her. She's given so much to us. We need to look after her and her golden years.
Yeah.
And the parents were like, their jaws were on the ground, and they're like, wow, this is such a good lesson for the horses, because, you know, I'm in of that generation too, and I'm like, I want my kids to feel like they need to take care of me when wow. I'm older.
Yeah.
So that was my story. And if I can give a small plug for Detroit Horsepower,
sure.
It's an organization in Detroit
that's
been around for about almost 10 years, and they're breaking ground, or at least having their groundbreaking ceremony in October. And they're really committed to helping young people learn social emotional skills through their interaction with horses.
Yeah, they're doing amazing things. They're doing amazing things, exposing kids in the city where, you know, we don't see horses all the time to the idea that a horse is not necessarily a pet, but an animal that you can have interaction and a relationship with.
Yeah, David in Detroit, David and Detroit Horsepower do great work.
Yeah,
I've had a chance to work with them a few times.
Yeah, Matt. Before we get to the next call, I do want to ask about the sort of baseline that you would say is the marker for, well, someone like Carrie, my producer here on the Created Equal, who does not have a pet and is not sure if he's ready for one. What are the things that people should think about before they make that commitment? I mean, we're talking about what happens when you get stretched and can't fulfill that that commitment all the time. What are the things that you say are the bare minimums?
Yeah, I would say just make sure you have some means to take care of the pet. I mean, right now in America, it's roughly $1,300 every American spends on their pet in totality: food, boarding, medical care, everything like that. Make sure you've got the time. You and I off air talked about cats versus dogs, and a lot of younger people are getting cats now because you have a little bit more freedom with a cat than you do with a dog. So making sure you've got the time, making sure you've got the activity level for the pet you're getting. You know, yeah. if you're mobility challenged, you probably don't want the year-old Australian Shepherd, and you want a dog that fits your lifestyle, which is what we do. You know, I would say that if you are thinking about it, just call us. We'll walk you through it and most people, if they're having those conversations and they're thinking about it, are probably ready.
And when people get a pet that they can't manage, too much money, too much energy, too much time, and they have to give it up. Do you see that happen, I guess, over and over at the shelter that some pets come back more than once?
Yeah, we do. I think when you talk about, you know, reasons why pets come back, our first response is to why and what can we do to help it? Is there something I can do to address this? Is this a short-term issue? Is it a medical issue that we can help you with? And would you keep your pet if we could? Is it a food issue? You know, I lost my job and I can't afford to feed my dog, so I have to surrender it. Well, if I can help support you through our pet food pantry, I mean, this year we're going to distribute 2.5 million pounds of pet food to 12,000 families.
Wow.
If we help you there, would you keep your pet? The answer is yes. If the answer at the end of the day is no, then we're here to help you, and we will find a new home for that pet. Now, from an adoption perspective, we do have a lot of them that come back. They just, it's the wrong one. A shelter is a really crazy environment for a dog, and a lot of times the dog you see in the shelter may not be the one you see in the home. So as it gets there and maybe it's not the right situation, let's come back and we'll figure this out together.
Yeah.
Maybe it's another dog. Maybe it's something different.
I keep hearing about two things with the shelter. One, how crowded the shelters are right now with pets and especially cats. I keep hearing there are lots of cats in the shelters. But also I hear from people all the time about animals walking the streets in Detroit, strays, that the number of dogs that, for instance, in my neighborhood that you would see in a week, it just seems up. It just, there seems to be more of a crisis going on. And I don't know if that's true or if it's just anecdotal, but I wonder what you make of the state of that issue in the city right now.
Yeah, it's an issue. Now, there was that Rolling Stone article several years ago that said there's 50,000 stray dogs running around Detroit.
Right.
If there was 50,000 stray dogs, I couldn't walk down the street without tripping on one.
You would see one every day.
Everywhere you go. So the reality is that's not true. And this, again, goes back to our talk when we talk about the human element, is those aren't pet problems. Those are people problems.
Yeah.
And more often than not, I actually have some colleagues in Dallas who had a study done recently about why dogs were running loose. And more often than not, it was somebody who said, oh, I don't want the dog tearing up the house while I'm at work. So they let the dog out, and then they go to work. And then they come back. That's a behavior issue.
Yeah.
And then you think about issues like containment. I mean, think about these recent fatalities we've had. We've had 5 fatalities in just a couple of years on dogs. And most of it is these dogs had owners, and they just had containment issues.
Yeah.
So it's addressing the issues of making sure people know how to properly contain their pet.
Get a yard.
Yeah,
get
exactly.
A fence.
And I will tell you, 80% of dog bites in the city of Detroit last time I checked happened in the property of the dog to a family or friend. Typically that's because the dog is either unsocialized or unhealthy. Mm-hmm. We can help that. We go door to door and we can help that issue. So it is an issue. But it is a human behavior issue, not a pet issue.
Not a pet issue. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal or at WDET. We're going to go to Harry next in Sterling Heights. Harry, what's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon. Well, good morning.
Hey.
You know, I give you guys credit. I've adopted at least 3 dogs, Humane Society.
Oh,
you know, for $200, you get a dog that appreciates you. I saw an article in a paper the other day, a guy paid $1.3 million for a Tibetan dog. I can't believe it. can't believe it. You know, all the dogs that I have, they're all mutts off the street. Somebody dumped them out the window, or I went to, you know, Humane Society, or I belong to both you and anti-cruelty. And I give you credit. And I'd say when you adopt a dog from your shelter, they know it.
Yeah. You know, Harry, that's absolutely true. Of the many dogs I've had, one did in fact come from the shelter here in Detroit back in the 90s. I don't know if you still do this, but they used to have a day at the zoo that they would take all the dogs from the shelter to the zoo. And for some reason, if you saw a dog at the zoo, you just kind of would take it. They would be out of dogs in a few hours. And I got a dog that we named Kennedy from there. And she, there was no question that she knew that she was a shelter dog and that we saved her life. She was the most loyal pet I ever had.
So it's funny you mentioned that event because it's Saturday.
Oh,
but it's no longer. But it's no longer at the zoo.
It's not at the zoo.
So changing leadership at the zoo. We thought it was time for a change. We now do that in conjunction with the Mike Morse Law Firm. So we hold an event at his law firm in early in the year, maybe May. And then this year it's Meet Your Best Friend at the shelter. So at our Berman Center, we're bringing in multiple partners. That's in Westland. Multiple partners, 11 to 2, now's the time. Come get yourself a dog or a cat. But I also want to comment on something else you said about people paying. So with veterinary care raising in cost just because of the market,
yeah,
and some of these dogs costing thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, especially on a show that is dedicated to talking about equity issues,
yeah,
we are further dividing the who can have a pet.
Sure.
And that's not and that's a difficult problem to navigate because the gap between who can afford vet care and who can afford a pet is going like this. And my belief is that nobody should have to surrender their pet for an avoidable issue.
Yeah.
And everyone should have the opportunity to have a pet. But the market is forcing that to be a challenging conversation.
And again, that's back to this question of how we get more vets available. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that the vet that I use for the animals is just overwhelmed. I mean, mm-hmm. It takes days and days now to get an appointment.
Yep.
And when you go there, it's just packed. I mean, they're charging more, but I think it's partially because it's just there's more work. There's not enough of them to keep up.
We consider ourselves an affordable clinic. We operate three veterinary centers, Rochester Hills, Detroit, and then Westland. But if you were to call us right now and get an appointment, you're probably waiting a month or two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that hard to get people in, and there is just more need than we have the ability to address. And I have 4 or 5 openings for veterinarians right now in my clinic. So I need the veterinarians to see the clients.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go next to Josh in Beverly Hills. Josh, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I have a question and then a comment. I'd like to know if the programs being described here are any way subsidized by state federal taxes or any of the employees or programs are subsidized. And then I have a comment.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there are two types of organizations in Michigan. There's an animal control shelter, which is your municipal entity that handles the work. So Detroit Animal Care and Control is an animal control shelter. We are an animal protection shelter. So our services in Detroit, for example, we receive no state or federal funding. And the only money we receive from municipalities are from the contract cities we have in Westland, which in no way covers the cost of that work. So we are entirely subsidized by earned revenue through our clinics, which, again, do not make enough money to cover what we put out. And our adoption revenue, everything else is philanthropy. It is corporations, individuals, and foundations that cover our work, but we do not receive federal or state money.
And it's a big bill, Matt, every year, right?
We have to raise about $20 million every year in addition to our earned revenue just to keep the work moving forward.
Yeah. Josh, go ahead with your comment.
The comment I have here is about what I'm hearing, just the general tone and demeanor of the emotional masturbation that this person's facilitating with the public.
Okay, come on.
We have here people being told that they deserve to have anything they wish without any need to prioritize their needs in life. You're taking what is a luxury good, which is essentially a choice that a person's making, and we're telling them that they need not worry about it being paid for. What we have here is persons who are enabling and empowering the persons most likely to neglect and abuse dogs to keep, or animals to keep them.
Mm.
What really should be doing is trying to counsel people that they should be making priorities in their lives. They should be setting attainable goals that relate to their own improvement or the persons in their family or the people around them. And keeping an animal is an enormous burden, as you can hear by the way we're describing all of these people having to come in and effectively rescue them in place.
Mm. So Josh, you're in favor of the idea of the kind of stratification of pet ownership? In other words, some people deserve it and other people don't?
Yeah, well, that would be an emotional appeal, and I think that there are persons who have choices in their life, and mm-hmm. all the various choices they make. I, for instance, do not choose to keep a pet because it's a burden, financial and otherwise.
Okay. Josh, I appreciate the call, and obviously I disagree with your perspective, but that's why we have the show. Thanks for participating. Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, I appreciate what he's saying, but I respectfully disagree as well. Here's the reality. People are going to have pets. And we can either ignore that or address it. And we don't walk around and indiscriminately provide people free everything. We have limited resources. So we prioritize who we believe we can help and what will have the most impact on their lives. I'll give you a great example.
Mm-hmm.
During COVID, we had a woman by the name of Cynthia. Cynthia has one arm, and she wheelchaired herself on public transportation to our pet food pantry because her seven cats needed food and she had mobility issues. She didn't have people to help her and she was alone and her cats needed help. Now, we provided her free sterilizations, free vaccinations. We deliver food to her house now. What I would ask is, I would think of those cats not as a luxury, but as a necessity. Absolutely. Imagine that woman's life without those cats. I don't think she's here. And so I think we can either ignore it or address it. And I choose to address it. And I think the opportunity that everyone should have the opportunity to own a pet. And it's not, there are issues of cruelty. There are issues of access to resources.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we should, again, as you put, stratify who should and who shouldn't have a pet.
Well, and I think the assumption that Josh is making that somehow the proclivity to be cruel to mm-hmm. pets correlates with poverty. Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing that supports that.
No, if I can comment on that, I would go one step further. I would say that there are people who are, we talked about this before, 100%, I can tell you, people are sacrificing their own needs so their pets don't suffer. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a great example. We work very closely with Jerry Brisson and Gleaners and Forgotten Harvest. And we, at first time I met with them, we sort of couldn't figure out a way to work together because the reality is, I think he was in human food distribution and didn't see the correlation between pets. We had a great conversation up at the Mackinac Policy Conference about our work, and we started asking questions about the people in his program. And 50 to 70% of the time, they said they were feeding the human food they were getting from these food insecurity programs to their dog. Mm. That's commitment to a pet. That's not a disregarding your responsibility. That's a commitment. You are sacrificing your own needs. And I have personally found people who have died because they wouldn't leave their pet behind.
Yeah.
And that's a passion we should amplify, not disregard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. Okay. Matt Pepper, CEO of Michigan Humane. It's been really wonderful to have you here in the studio with us today. Thanks for joining us here on Created Equal.
Thanks for having me. Tell Bertie, Ernest Stein, and Edison I said hi.
That's right. All three of them. And we're going to welcome Carrie back into the conversation because I hear he's decided he's ready. Is that right?
No, I haven't made a full decision yet.
Yes, you have. But everyone knows you have.
After y'all were trying to pitch me. Even Dave Lyons in here, our senior producer, has been pitching me on some dogs as well. But I was hearing some of the statistics that you were listening in there, Matt. The $1,300 was the number. I was like, okay, what are all the different types of elements that you're trying to purchase when it comes to, what is that made up of?
Veterinary care, which is increasing in cost every day. So it's veterinary care. It's the food you got to pay for all the time. It's toys. It's dog beds. So toys, I'll tell you a really quick story. So I've got two three-legged dogs. And everyone thinks that because of what we do, we must have the most well-behaved dogs in the world. Mm-hmm. My dog is a complete a-hole. But he's mine. He's eaten 22 remote controls, three dog beds, two dog crates. And so there's a cost associated with that. But for most people, it's just food, daycare, veterinary care, those things.
And they can be they can be expensive. I mean, I can tell you about some whopper medical bills I've incurred for the dogs over the years.
Is $1,300 sound accurate to you, Stephen? That's about what you experience?
Each year?
Per dog, I assume, right?
Per dog, that's probably about right. It's probably a little more than that, frankly, especially when they're younger or older, right? Mm-hmm. The sort of middle years are I guess, less. There's less stuff that seems to happen, but when they're young and then when they're old, you do end up spending some money on them.
Yep.
I will say you two aren't the only folks in my life that are trying to get me to to get a dog particularly, but a pet nonetheless. And I'm curious about either dogs or cats. I am also interested in hedgehogs, but I don't know if that's something you all would have at the Humane Society.
Funny you say that. I don't know if you're trying to get out of this or trying to get back into it, because we do periodically get them.
You do?
I know a guy.
A hedgehog?
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of the hedgehog.
Oh, we have rabbits, guinea pigs, gerbils. We've actually had tigers, lions, and bears at one point for various reasons. So,
are you serious?
No, I'm serious. You name it, we can find it.
That's crazy.
Carrie, get a dog. Trust me. Yeah, your life will be better for it.
Yeah,
Okay, Matt, again, thanks so much for joining us here. All right, that's going to do it for us on Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes of the show at WDET.org, and we would love if you would subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lyons. Our engineer is Nate Bender, and our program director is Adam Fox. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.